Welcome to a special edition of Power Play. We're going to pick up that coverage now, the Derek Chauvin verdict. We are minutes away from the verdict in the trial of Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer charged with the death of George Floyd. These are live shots you're seeing there. As you see, the crowds are surrounding the highly secured downtown Minneapolis courthouse, and you'll see the seal. We'll take you inside that courtroom in a minute. You're seeing the seal where the jury of six white and six people who are both black and multiracial deliberated for 10 hours before reaching a verdict after a two-week trial. They heard from more than 45 witnesses. Chauvin himself did not testify in a case that featured, of course, that infamous video of Chauvin pressing his knee into the neck of the 46-year-old George Floyd for more than 9.5 minutes on May 25th, 2020, a video that has sparked global protests, violence, and has animated the Black Lives Matter movement and other movements, and a deep examination of race and racism in policing in the United States and around the world, including here in Canada. Chauvin is facing three charges. They are second-degree murder. That carries a maximum sentence of 40 years. A third-degree murder and a second-degree manslaughter charge. If guilty, these sentences would run concurrently. It would only actually be a maximum of 40 years. The judge in this case, and you will see him in a minute, Peter Cahill, will be the one who will actually decide the sentence. The defense has argued that Derek Chauvin did not use excessive force, and that George Floyd's death was caused, they argue, by a pre-existing heart condition and drug use. Now, this case, as we know, has become a political lightning rod after Reverend Al Sharpton said, well, Derek Chauvin is on the stand. America is on trial. Today, the president of the United States, Joe Biden, said he's praying for the right verdict. Now, again, we are waiting for that verdict. We have a full team here to give you complete coverage of it. Joining me now, and who will be joining me, Joy Malbon. She is on the ground in Minneapolis, and she's with me now. We will bring in Sandy Hudson, the co-founder of Black Lives Matter Toronto, and of course my colleague Angie Seth from CTV News Channel is going to join us. Let's go to you, Joy. You're on the ground, obviously. This is a moment of great anticipation, great anxiety. Give us a sense of what it's like right now in Minneapolis.
This is a moment for America, a pivotal moment, a turning point. Everybody's been looking at this trial to see some kind of change in this country. We're starting to see a lot of crowds gather here, flags, Black Lives Matter. You're seeing some protesters gather. There's going to be prayer vigils, but there's this sense of a city being on edge, a country on edge, in fact. There are 3,000 National Guard in this state, standing guard outside the courthouse here. You see the barbed wire and the barricades. More soldiers are here than in Afghanistan for the United States at this point. You've got states that have declared states of emergency because, of course, we all remember what happened when everyone saw that horrific video. It ignited protests across America and worldwide. So everyone here is pretty anxious. They hope it's a celebration, but they're also bracing for protests.
Okay, Joy, stay with us. Joy will be with us. She's near the Hennepin County building. There it is. You're looking at it. That is, of course, the courthouse where we will get the verdict in the Derek Chauvin case in the death of George Floyd. Let me bring in Angie Seth, who is joining me as we're getting a peek in here, Angie, at Peter Cahill, the judge. Hang on, Angie, as we wait for the judge. And Angie Seth is going to be with us throughout this. This is the judge, Peter Cahill, just testing the mic. And you're going to see both the prosecution and the defense teams here. They are standing up. That means the jury is about to walk in. Let's listen in.
All right, please be seated. Members of the jury, I understand you have a verdict. Members of the jury, I will now read the verdicts as they will appear in the permanent records of the 4th Judicial District. State of Minnesota, County of Hennepin, District Court, 4th Judicial District. State of Minnesota Plaintiff versus Derek Michael Chauvin, Defendant. Verdict, Count 1. Court file number 27, CR20-12646. We, the jury, in the above entitled matter as to Count 1, unintentional second-degree murder while committing a felony, find the defendant guilty. This verdict agreed to this 20th day of April, 2021 at 1:44 p.m. Signed, juror foreperson, juror number 19. Same caption, verdict count 2. We, the jury, in the above entitled matter as to count 2, third-degree murder, perpetrating an eminently dangerous act, find the defendant guilty. This verdict agreed to this 20th day of April, 2021 at 1:45 p.m. Signed by jury foreperson, juror number 19. Same caption, verdict count 3. We, the jury, in the above entitled matter as to count 3, second-degree manslaughter, culpable negligence, creating an unreasonable risk, find the defendant guilty. This verdict agreed to this 20th day of April, 2021 at 1:45 p.m. Jury foreperson 019. Members of the jury, I'm now going to ask you individually if these are your true and correct verdicts. Please respond yes or no. Juror number 2, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 9, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 19, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 27, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 44, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 52, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 55, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 79, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 85, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 89, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 91, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Juror number 92, are these your true and correct verdicts?
Yes.
Are these your verdicts, so say you one, so say you all?
Yes.
Yes.
Members of the jury, I find that the verdicts as read reflect the will of the jury and will be filed accordingly. I have to thank you on behalf of the people of the state of Minnesota for not only jury service, but heavy-duty jury service. What I'm going to ask you to do now is to follow the deputy back into your usual room, and I will join you in a few minutes to answer questions and to advise you further. So, all rise for the jury. Be seated. With the guilty verdicts returned, we're going to have Blakely. You may file a written argument as to Blakely factors within 1 week. The court will issue findings on the Blakely factors, the factual findings, 1 week after that. We'll order a PSI immediately, returnable in 4 weeks. And we will also have a briefing on, after you get the PSI, 6 weeks from now, and then 8 weeks from now, we will have sentencing. We'll get you the exact dates in a scheduling order. Is there a motion on behalf of the state?
Your Honor, the state would move to have the court revoke the defendant's bail and remand him into custody pending sentencing.
Bail is revoked, bond is discharged, and the defendant is remanded to the custody of the Hennepin County Sheriff. Anything further?
All right.
Thank you.
Begin. Yes. Let the healing work begin.
Yes.
God, please let the healing work begin. Repentance.
Yes.
Repentance.
Yes.
Accountability.
Yes.
And healing.
Yes.
Repentance.
Yes.
Accountability.
Yes.
Before we learn that they could come to a unanimous conclusion that they are being by the prosecution.
about to read that law, and he said to the jury, it's a symbol of what the 9-year-old girl, one of the bystanders, said that she heard the paramedics say when they arrived there more than 9 minutes after that meeting was put to George Floyd's name. She said,
guilty, 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 guilty on all three counts, second degree murder, guilty, third degree murder, guilty, second degree manslaughter. The family of George Floyd watching closely, relief pouring over them, fists in the air, tears pouring down, as the former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin found guilty by a jury unanimously on all three charges. You're looking at live reaction in Minneapolis. You had a picture, the camera was on Derek Chauvin there. He had no reaction, wearing a mask at 5:09, April 20th, 2021, found guilty on all three charges. In 8 weeks, there will be a sentencing. But let's listen in right away, because the examination of racism and policing has not over. The movement that was animated by the death of George Floyd, now the murder of George Floyd, second degree murder, third degree murder, second degree manslaughter, that has sparked this examination. I'm going to get immediate reaction from Joy Melbourne. We're listening in. Joy, let's go to you right now and get reaction.
Listen, I'm showing you pictures. Shannon's taking pictures right now on the streets in front of the courthouse. You've got a crowd of people doing high fives, fists in the air with signs saying Black Lives Matter. And there's one gentleman here who's saying next stop is Daunte Wright. They want justice for Daunte Wright. This is a huge celebration. Guilty on all three counts. The Floyd family had hoped for this. They hoped for justice. They hope that their brother did not die in vain. This is an amazing sight, Evan. I can't believe it. I mean, they're just marching down the street. It's very peaceful right now. Fists in the air. Say his name, George Floyd. Say his name, George Floyd.
Yeah, let's listen in, Joy, to some of this. Listen to the emotion pouring out. You mentioned Daunte Wright, the 20-year-old African-American man killed April 11th. Again, very nearby in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. So calling for justice, you're going to hear that name a lot in another case. Let's listen in again. Here, I want to bring in Sandy Hudson. She's the co-founder of Black Lives Matter Toronto, to get a reaction to the verdict here. Sandy, guilty second degree murder, guilty third degree murder, guilty second degree manslaughter. This was not just about the trial of Derek Chauvin, but I want you to get your reaction to the verdict and then the long-term impact of this. Sandy Hudson.
Well, my reaction to the verdict is, of course. I mean, what else could anyone who's a reasonable person think the outcome could be? But overall, I feel I just feel quite hollow, because I know that the courts are not going to bring George Floyd back. They're not going to bring all of the folks that we've lost in our communities back. And what needs to happen now, and I fear that people don't understand this, what needs to happen now is a public contention with the way that we deal with security and safety in our communities. We must start dealing with the root causes of why the police are constantly killing and harming Black people. And that is, they do too much. We have to divest from policing in our community. They shouldn't be doing a bunch of the work that they're doing. And until we're ready to do that, what happens now, all I know is that I can look forward to the next one. You know, we had a budget yesterday released in Canada that, despite all of the names that we've heard this year coming out from Canada of people being killed by police, not a single acknowledgement or effort to deal with these issues from the federal government. We are just apparently not valued enough to be cared for in terms of taking away this service that serves as like that just engages in terror with our community. And that to me is just absolutely unacceptable. So there's a sense of hollowness that I'm feeling, knowing that until we are ready to deal with that, I can just expect the next incident.
Sandy, a reaction like yours coming in. We're listening to live shots. Listen to this. Obviously, there's some celebration. There's anger. There's the hollowness Sandy talked about. You're looking at live shots. We are waiting. We will show you reaction from George Floyd's family. Let me actually show you that right now. This is the reaction of George Floyd's family to the verdict that we just heard. Look at this.
Can't even words can't put it in, explain what I feel right now. Just emotions just going through my body. So happy that my uncle finally got justice. And this is not only for him. This is only the beginning. Like, you know, it's just the start. Beginning, we're very happy. Justice has been served.
This is all I have to say. Bianca, can I have you come over here for a second?
He didn't deserve none of it.
George Floyd was your uncle.
Yes.
I mean, this is... Just tell us what you're feeling in this moment.
I can sleep at peace now. He back with my grandma again. This is what we prayed for. This is all we ever wanted. We got justice for my uncle. And justice for so much more justice for everybody else, but I'm happy that we got justice out.
He's not in control anymore. He has no power.
What do you say to the world in a moment like this? A moment that so many have been waiting to see and hear, but especially you guys.
I just simply want to say thank you, y'all. We feel the love, the unity from everywhere. I want to say thank you. Continue to stand with us. Continue to stand with everybody. This is only the beginning.
Well, Tanya, can you tell us, you know, we have seen you at so much. You've been at every demonstration along with the entire family, but especially you. You've been so outspoken, so passionate. This was your baby brother. You changed his diapers.
Yes, man. I just, God, like I told him, I'm going to pray for this man. I am. I'm going to pray for him, you know, because that's not how our family, that's not how we do, but I'm going to tell you something. I saw I was going to lose my life when I got that news. And like I said, to see him handcuffed and walk out of that courthouse like my brother was handcuffed, that told me he has no more power. He's not in control anymore, but my brother is in control. We can never get him back, $27 million. It don't matter. We can never get him back. There's nothing left here to remind us but a memory of his faith and the love we have for him. And I'm so happy. I'm so, so happy right now. God, if you could just feel every beat of my heart, you know. I'm so happy. And I thank God.
Is this what you all expected? I mean, you said a little while ago when they were waiting on the verdict, you didn't want to say what it was you expected. Is this what you expected? Guilty on all three counts?
We come from a broken system, so I did not expect it. So to get justice on all three counts, guilty.
This is a monumental moment in mystery because
this is the beginning of something new. This is the beginning of something new.
Change the world. Okay? And I'm very biblical. All of that didn't happen for him to stop. This is something that never happened. This kind of movement. And another thing that's never happened was this. Three guilty on a man of color.
Tell me the difference between your emotions now and the emotions when you guys won the civil suit against the city and got that settlement.
But in this case,
there's no comparison. I can't even, there's no words. I can't even compare that to this. Because we got justice. We got justice. We won. Okay? We won. He may not be here, but we won.
Say his name!
George Floyd!
As opposed to something that can actually instill a sense of confidence.
He may not be here, but we won. George Floyd's sister. An emotional reaction saying, we got justice. I am so happy. His niece saying, I can sleep in peace now. Just extraordinary reaction from the Floyd family as they have watched this and the verdict, guilty second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. Political and social commentator Avis Jones DeWeaver joins us. Thank you for being here. What do you make of not only the verdict and the reaction, but the fallout of this?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that family deserves justice. That family deserves justice. And too often that does not happen. But I am at least happy that this family gets to go to bed tonight knowing that not only did they fight for justice for their loved one, their brother, their uncle, they also actually fought the fight all the way through to victory, along with those of us around the world who pushed this nation in the direction of justice. And so I am so proud of them, and I'm so happy for them that they get to feel the justice that countless others have been denied.
And now this verdict is going to have, I mean, there's so many other cases, as you know. What do you think the fallout will be of this?
Well, this needs to be part of a momentum that continues the work that needs to go on around improving justice as it relates to policing in America. So for me, that means that we have that Dante situation that just happened in Minnesota where that young man was murdered. His murderer was arrested soon after. So we have another trial that's going to come up. Will we see a similar level of justice in that case? It's left to see. We know that we have legislation in Congress right now that is meant to provide some fundamental changes in terms of policing in America. Will we have the political will now to push that through instead of having it stalled in the Senate because there are, you know, we're unable to find, in essence, 60 senators that are willing to pass it? And then what does this mean in terms of what happens in states and localities around the nation? Because, you know, the federal legislation is great, but a lot of the rulemaking that goes into the interactions with people, with police across this nation, really is a state and local issue. I'm hoping that this will mean that we see reverberations across the country in terms of changes that will be made to hold police accountable. Because until this becomes normal right, and not an aberration, I don't expect to see seismic levels of change in this country when it comes to this issue of police brutality.
Let me bring in Angie Seth. Angie, you're watching this closely. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and there's a number of things here that, you know, we want to point out. Again, guilty on all three charges there, Evan. What's also really critical, bail was revoked. Derek Chauvin remains in custody. We know that the sentencing is not going to be, you know, for another 8 weeks or so. But all of these measures here, and I think Avis I'd like her to comment on this. All of these measures that we're seeing here coming from the jury, coming from the judge, you know, I'm going to use the word unprecedented, and I think Ava's going to attest to this. So many cases that we have seen where I think all of us were sort of sitting in our seats with a bit of a gut punch in our stomachs going, is it going to be guilty on all three counts? And you heard George Floyd's niece there saying she didn't expect that. They were surprised. She didn't expect that it was going to be guilty on all three counts. Also heard from George Floyd's sister saying this is the beginning of something new. Avis, your thoughts on that? Are we now paving, perhaps, hopefully, a new path here?
I sure hope so, because you're exactly right when you say this is unprecedented, unfortunately. I was expecting guilty verdicts. I wasn't necessarily expecting three guilty verdicts. So that definitely to me shows that there is progress here. The proof will be in the pudding in terms of what happens next. Is this something that we will see? Will this become normalcy? Because here's the reality. Once again, unless there is accountability, this lack of human regard for Black life in America, police, especially at the hands of police, will continue. There needs to be some level of punishment and severe punishment in order to change behavior. And so I'm hoping that this really puts a specific sort of, no pun intended, nail in the coffin of police brutality in this nation by sending the message that you will be held accountable when you murder the people that you have sworn to protect and serve. I'm hoping that one day we can look back on this and say that this was the beginning of moving this nation in another direction. But I, once again, given our long history with this, I need to really see it before I can believe it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Evan?
Yeah, stand by, of course, Avis Jones-DeWeaver and Angie Seth, stand by. I just want to look at these live shots. This is the reaction to the verdict that Angie was just talking about. This is downtown Minneapolis where the crowds are gathered around. Significantly more relief there as we're looking at these shots and the reaction. This was heavily protected area, but you hear the horns and the chants and the tears. Someone who we've covered this with, who is knew the Floyd family and George Floyd, Bishop Harding Smith, is good enough to join us now with his reaction as we're hearing the horns in Minneapolis honk. Let's bring in Bishop Harding Smith, sir. You and I have had many conversations over the course of this long and tragic episode, your reaction now to the verdict and where we go from here?
That is a good question. Where do we go from here? What are the next steps? You see, Derek Chauvin just didn't happen overnight. Derek Chauvin has been grown. He has been protected. He has been nurtured by the Minneapolis Police Department. We as a people have seen this before. We have gone down this road before. And so we are skeptical. The reason that we are getting or having a guilty verdict today is because the world demanded it. Because you, the reporters, demanded this. Minneapolis police have protected their own time after time after time. Where do we go from here? As a bishop, I am hoping that this verdict here today, that this verdict would change the hearts and minds of people, that George Floyd's life would not have been in vain, that it would change the culture of racism within the Minneapolis Police Department. We are praying, we are hoping that we see changes, and we are begging and have been crying for a long time for change. We are dealing with a department where the Minneapolis Department of Human Rights have filed a complaint against the Minneapolis Police Department. This is deeply rooted within this department. And you're speaking to a bishop that I have also lived in Brooklyn Center for 15 years where the shooting of Mr. Wright took place. After the shooting, I was one of the very few people that the chief of police called. This is someone that have been to many of my community engagement, my police community engagement, where we had the community interacting with the police concerning the treatment that we have received from these officers. So right now, a lot of us are skeptical. Yes, we love the verdict. We love guilty on all counts. But the question lies is, for how long? As soon as the attention fades, these officers go right back to doing what they always have been doing. They just buy time. After a shooting, after a tragic incident, we got promises. We got promises that they would do better. Mm-hmm. You see the Minneapolis police chief? This Minneapolis police chief, in 2007, he was among five officers that filed a lawsuit against the department claiming firsthand racism, and he had tasted racism. So this is something that we are all skeptical because we don't know what lies ahead.
Yeah, Bishop Harding Smith, you're right. And does the tragedy of 9.5 minutes that murdered George Floyd lead to permanent change? We don't know. Let me show you some more reaction now, and I'll bring back Angie Seth after, and stay with us, Bishop Harding Smith, because there has been resonance in Canada, and I want Angie to talk about that in a minute as well, because this case has had ripple effects, as Sandy Hudson has told us about. Let's listen into some reaction immediately after this verdict as the fallout continues. Listen to this.
Come one day, deep in our heart, I do believe that we shall overcome one day, and it doesn't bring back at all. It doesn't. But hey, it says, hey, enough is enough. If you're doing wrong, you deserve to be punished, not killed. But today means enough is enough. And now, truly Black Lives Matter. And now that Black Lives Matter, then if white needs some help, white lives matter. If a police officer needs some help, police officer, they matter. But until Black lives mattered, nothing can. So today was a foundation. Today said, hey, enough is enough. Black I see you. Black boy, I see you. Black man, I see you. And now together, we can be one. Rachel Washington. Yes. I am originally from Chicago. I just moved here. I'm a worship pastor at Blue Oak Church under the leadership of Pastor Nicole and Pastor Jeff. And our pastors, they're a couple, and they're Black and white. So our diversity starts at the top. And that's what we're about, Black and white, coming together as one. Now we can.
That's interesting sentiment, Bishop Harding Smith. And I'll bring Angie back in a minute. And our Joy Malbon's on the ground there looking at all this. Bringing people together after so much division, Bishop, it doesn't come easy. One verdict does not do that, does it? What's your take on that?
It doesn't. You see, we live in a country where we as a people, part of the Constitution said we were only 3/5 a person. So this systemic racism just didn't start today. We saw back in 2016 when the leader, before all of these shootings and killings of unarmed Black men, the leader stood up and said, don't be so gentle with them. And when he made that comment, when the president came out and made that comment, we saw rash, we saw a tidal wave of shootings everywhere of young Black men. He said, I will stand with you and I will back you up. Look, we want people to be held accountable for their actions. Black people, white people, all people. But when you shoot someone in the back, when you murder someone, when you step on the neck, I tell you this, Derek Chauvin will not step on the neck of a dog for 5 minutes. But yet and still, he stood on the neck of a human being because he has no empathy. The Minneapolis Police Department do not feel our pain. They do not feel what we feel. Until law enforcement and policing everywhere reflects the community they serve, until they start to have empathy and feel and know that they are there to serve all people, not just some people, we will get nowhere. We will be back down this road again in the next 6 months. And so, right now, I'm rather skeptical, very, very skeptical, because racism just didn't start today. This has been part of our moral fabric. And so in order to change the attitude, the minds, the hearts, we all have to take a deep look at ourselves. We have to look at our history. We have to make fundamental changes that work. We have to be willing to change who we are. We have to be willing to feel other people's pain. We have to be willing to put ourselves in the shoes of people that are brown, that are Black, brown, purple, yellow, green. We need to say, I am with you, no matter what color you are.
Bishop Harding Smith. as you say, there's a poison root that is difficult to stop the poison fruit of. But today, three counts of guilty on all counts. Stand by, Bishop Harding Smith. I want to bring in my colleague, Angie Seth. You hear Bishop Harding Smith talk about that. It is of course, much of that is a unique American experience, but not so much. And you know that. Sandy Hudson's talked about this, Angie. This has had a resonance in Canada, a profound examination here in Canada, as around the world. What has this case meant in Canada? What have been the ripples of this case, Angie?
You know, this is absolutely huge. And when the murder of George Floyd happened, when we saw the video, when that came out a year ago, in May, here on News Channel, we started a segment called Realities of Racism, because it was really important to really outline, to talk about, to bring those people who had a voice on this, experiences on this, to talk about what the concerns are and what the situation is here in Canada. You saw the reaction on the streets right across the country. We saw it right around the world. Demonstrations, people asking for justice, people asking for an end to systemic racism, members of the Black, Indigenous, people of color community were all coming out, telling their stories. And yet at that time, Evan, we also saw a number of incidents that, again, occurred, and majority of them were dealing with people of color. And people were fed up. Enough was enough. And as just as you heard there, and I think a lot of what you're seeing in Minneapolis echoes what we were seeing here in Canada as well over the course of the summer, week after week, so many of those marches talking about one day we shall overcome, enough is enough. And that was really the sentiment. Enough was enough. And sadly, George Floyd's death was another trigger, not the trigger. It was another trigger, because there have been so many. What's also very interesting that we found here in Canada is there isn't a proper national registry, Evan, with regards to police shootings, with regards to deaths at the hands of police. And that needs to change. So what we're going to see here and what we have seen is a call for action. You know what, Evan, I'm just getting word here that the Attorney General is just about to speak right now. I'm going to throw it over you so that we can just take a listen in.
All right, let's listen in to the Attorney General. We don't have audio yet. Hang on. This is the Attorney General. We're listening in a reaction. As soon as we get reaction, let's listen in now.
Hard, painstaking work has culminated today. I would not call today's verdict justice, however, because justice implies true restoration. But it is accountability, which is the first step towards justice. And now the cause of justice is in your hands. And when I say your hands, I mean the hands of the people of the United States. George Floyd mattered. He was loved by his family and his friends. His death shocked the conscience of our community, our country, the whole world. He was loved by his family and friends. But that isn't why he mattered. He mattered because he was a human being. And there is no way we can turn away from that reality. The people who stopped and raised their voices on May 25th, 2020, we're a bouquet of humanity, a phrase I stole from my friend Jerry Blackwell. A bouquet of humanity, old, young, men and women, Black and white, a man from the neighborhood just walking to get a drink, a child going to buy a snack with her cousin, an off-duty firefighter on her way to a community garden, brave young women, teenagers, who press record on their cell phones. Why did they stop? They didn't know George Floyd. They didn't know he had a beautiful family. They didn't know he had been a great athlete. And they didn't know he was a proud father or that he had people in his life who loved him. They stopped and raised their voices, and they even challenged authority because they saw his humanity. They stopped and they raised their voices because they knew that what they were seeing was wrong. They didn't need to be medical professionals or experts in the use of force. They knew it was wrong. And they were right. These community members, this bouquet of humanity, did it again in this trial. They performed simple yet profound acts of courage. They told the truth, and they told the whole world the truth about what they saw. They were vindicated by the chief of police, by Minneapolis's longest-serving police officer, and by many other police officers who stepped up and testified as to what they saw and to what they knew. What happened on that street was wrong. We owe it, and we owe our gratitude to fulfilling their, we owe them our gratitude for fulfilling their civic duty and for their courage in telling the truth. To countless people in Minnesota and across the United States who joined them in peacefully demanding justice for George Floyd, we say, all of us, thank you. In the coming days, more may seek to express themselves again through petition and demonstration. I urge everyone to honor the legacy of George Floyd by doing so calmly, legally, and peacefully. I urge everyone to continue the journey to transformation and justice. It's in your hands now. I also want to address the Floyd family, if I may. Over the last year, the family of George Floyd had to relive again and again the worst day of their lives when they lost their brother, their father, their friend. I'm profoundly grateful to them for giving us the time we needed to prosecute this case. They have shown the world what grace and class and courage really look like. Although a verdict alone cannot end their pain, I hope it's another step on the long path toward healing for them. There's no replacing your beloved Perry, or Floyd, as his friends called him, but he is the one who sparked a worldwide movement, and that's important. We owe our thanks to the men and women of the jury who gave many hours of their time and attention to carefully listening to the evidence, weighing the facts, rendering a verdict. They are regular people from all walks of life, a lot like that bouquet of humanity on that corner on May 25th and in that courtroom. They answered the call, and they served in a landmark trial. They now deserve to return to their lives. If they ask you to respect their privacy, we ask you to honor that request. I want to acknowledge the remarkable team that helped us prosecute the case. We put everything we had into this prosecution. We presented the best case that we could, and the jury heard us, and we're grateful for that. We had the sole burden of proof in the case, and history shows that winning cases like these can be difficult. I'm proud of every hour, every minute, and every ounce of effort we put in this case. And let me tell you, we spent many hours working on this case, did we not? We, week after week, committee meeting after committee meeting, this team never let up and it never quit. We fought every day, and we did it together. The Attorney General's office together with the Hennepin County Attorney's office. Thank you, sir. And we did it together. I'm deeply grateful to everyone who worked on the case. Most of these folks will tell you it's a bad idea to put together a team of all Michael Jordans. Nobody would want to pass the ball. This team, that was their true strength, is sharing the load, passing the ball, understanding that all of us together are smarter than any one of us alone. And that worked. Although the verdict has been rendered, this is not the end. In the coming weeks, the court will determine sentencing, and later this summer, we expect to present another case. We will not be talking about that. This verdict reminds us how hard it is to make enduring change. And I just want to finish by sharing some important historical legacy, if you allow me. In 1968, the Kerner Commission was formed to investigate the causes of uprisings across major American cities. And a man named Dr. Kenneth Clark, a famous African-American psychologist who, along with his equally accomplished psychologist wife, Mamie, contributed to compelling research in the Brown versus Board of Education case. And Dr. Clark testified at the Kerner Commission. And I want to quote you what he said. I read that report, the one in the 1919 riot in Chicago, and it was as if I were reading the report of investigating the committee of the Harlem riot in 1935, the report on investigating the Harlem riot in 1943, and the report of the McCone Commission on the Watts riot. I must say again in candor to you, the members of this commission, it's like a kind of an Alice in Wonderland with the same moving picture reshown over and over again, the same analysis, the same recommendation, and the same in action. Those are the words of Dr. Clark in 1968. Here we are in 2021. Here we are in 2021, still addressing the same problem. Since Dr. Clark testified, we have seen Rodney King, Abner Louima, Oscar Grant, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Freddie Gray, Sandra Bland, Philando Castile, Laquan McDonald, Stephon Clark, Atiana Jefferson, Anton Black, Breonna Taylor, and now Dante Wright and Adam Toledo. This has to end. We need true justice. That's not one case. That is a social transformation that says that nobody's beneath the law and no one is above it. This verdict reminds us that we must make enduring, systemic, societal change. More than a month ago, months before George Floyd was murdered, the Minnesota Public Safety Commissioner John Harrington and I released the recommendations of our working group on reducing deadly force encounters with law enforcement. What all of us in that working group, including law enforcement, wanted is for everyone to go home safe. Anytime someone doesn't, everyone's lives are changed forever. We need to use this verdict as an inflection point. What if we just prevented the problem instead of having to try these cases? We don't want any more community members dying at the hands of law enforcement and their families' lives ruined. We don't want any more law enforcement members having to face criminal charges and their families' lives ruined. We don't want any more communities torn apart. One way to prevent this is to get into a new relationship where we as a society re-examine the use of force and our old settled assumptions. I'm so proud of Chief Arredondo and the Minneapolis police officers who, by their testimony, said enough is enough. And another way to prevent it is by acknowledging and lifting up everyone's humanity, helping communities heal, and officers be well. Another way to prevent it is with accountability. Passing laws and instituting policies and training is important, but they must be more than words on paper, and there must be accountability for violating them. With this verdict, we have brought some accountability. Finally, this verdict demands us to never give up the hope that we can make enduring change. Generations of people said slavery would never end. Generations said Jim Crow would never end. Generations said women would never be equal to men. Generations said if you were different in any way, you could never be a full and equal member of our society. Today, we have to end this travesty of recurring, enduring deaths at the hands of law enforcement. Those beliefs are things we have to focus our attention on. And as I now do close, I just want to say to you, the work of our generation is to put unaccountable law enforcement behind us. It's time to transform the relationship between community and the people who are sworn to protect them from one that is mistrustful, suspicious, and in some cases terrifying, into one that is empathetic, compassionate, and affirming. That will benefit everyone, including police officers who deserve to serve in a profession that is honored, in departments where they don't have to worry about colleagues who don't follow the rules. Now that work is in your hands. The work of our generation is to put an end to the vestiges of Jim Crow and the centuries of trauma, and finally put an end to racism. We can end it. It doesn't have to be with us into the future if we decide now to have true liberty and justice for all. The work of our generation is to say goodbye to old practices that don't serve us anymore and to put them all behind us. One conviction, even one like this one, that creates, even one like this one can create a powerful new opening to shed old practices and reset relationships. So with that, I just want to say that I do hope that people step forward and understand that nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. You can do something the way like everyday people like Donald Williams and Genevieve Hansen and Christopher Martin and Charles McMillan and all those teenagers and young people stepped up and did something. You can do things like help pass the George Floyd Justice and Accountability Act. It's in your hands. Let's get the work done. And now I'd like to invite my friend and partner in justice, Michael Freeman, Hennepin County Attorney.
That is Keith Ellison. He's the...
Thank you, Mr. Attorney
That's,
General.
That's Keith Ellison. He's the Attorney General of Minnesota, saying this has to end. It's not one case. It's about a social transformation. This is the obviously the team that put together the case against Derek Chauvin that led to the three guilty counts. Guilty on all counts. You're looking at live shots there. That is downtown Minneapolis. Reaction to this is pouring in. Reports are saying that President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris have called the Floyd family already to talk about the verdict, and both of them will deliver remarks later this evening about the Chauvin verdict. We don't know what time, but Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the President and Vice President of the United States, will deliver remarks on this, so you get a sense of how absolutely huge that is. Even here in Canada, Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP, has just tweeted out, "My heart is with the friends and family of George Floyd today. One verdict won't change an entire system. It won't eradicate the systemic racism embedded within our institutions. But in the memory of George Floyd, it's one small step in the right direction." The NBA has just released a statement, and I think we can just quickly show it to you. The NBPA Executive Director Michelle Roberts and the Commissioner Adam Silver said George Floyd's murder was a flashpoint for how we look at race and justice in our country. We are pleased that justice appears to have been served. We also recognize there is much work to be done. And the National Basketball Association and the National Basketball Players Association, together with our newly formed Social Justice Coalition, will redouble our efforts to advocate for meaningful change in the areas of criminal justice and policing. Let's go back to the live as the political reaction, the reaction from sports are pouring in. Here's Michael Freeman. Let's listen in.
The end of the conversation about officer killings of civilians. We need to prevent these killings in the first place. The Minnesota legislature, as it moves into the final 3 weeks of the session, must pass a number of bills that will make policing fairer and safer for all, but especially for black men and women and other people of color. I've been lobbying legislators to pass these critical bills. If they fail, then it will be time once again to have a statewide task force to hold hearings and come up with model legislation intending to put an end to these deaths. I am prepared to be part of that fight. Again, Keith, great job.
Thank you, Mike.
And now I'd like to ask the trial lawyers to share some thoughts, if they have any. But before I do that, I'd like to myself thank a number of people. And I'm just going to start by, why don't we just have our trial lawyers come forward, and then we'll thank our whole team. So, Jerry, Steve, which one of y'all want to do it? Matt, where's Matt?
Thank you, Attorney General Ellison. And when I say thank you to Attorney General Ellison, I want to thank you for calling me and calling me back into public service, which is something that I was able to do as a federal prosecutor, as a state prosecutor, as an assistant county attorney in the United States Army. When I left private practice, I thought those days were behind me, but I received a call, and it was from Keith Ellison. And he gave me the opportunity to step back into public service, something that is so important to me something that I cherish. And I would just encourage anyone, if you get a call like that as an attorney, it's a privileged life, it's a noble profession. And if somebody calls you and they ask you for help, don't overthink it. Just do it. As I've found in my career, you get a lot more than you give. I'm honored to have stood with the Floyd family, to stood with the state of Minnesota as we go through this painful process together. And it's been my privilege to practice with this incredible, incredible, gifted trial team. And so I stand here today in gratitude. I'm thankful. I want to thank the jury for their service, for doing what was right and decent and correct and speaking the truth and finding the right verdict in this case.
I'm Jerry Blackwell, and my comments are going to be fairly brief. I want to first say thank you to all of these selfless servants that you see standing here and the many more that you do not see, who had the willingness, the courage, the passion, the intestinal fortitude to get into good trouble. They stepped into the light and they shine. And for that, I say thank you. I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for the opportunity that I've had to serve. Now, no verdict can bring George Perry Floyd back to us. But this verdict does give a message to his family that he was somebody, that his life mattered, that all of our lives matter. And that's important. And I also hope that this verdict, for all of the rest of collective, all of us, will help us further along the road toward a better humanity. Thank you all.
Matt Frank.
Well, I can't really follow that too much, but I just want to say that it's been really a privilege to work with this awesome group of dedicated, hardworking people in this endeavor. But it's also been just a total privilege to get to know the Floyd family and to spend time with them and get to know them. Because first and foremost, this is for you, George Floyd, and for your family and friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. So let me also thank very publicly Aaron Eldridge, who was part of our trial team, who's not here today, but was indispensable. Lola Velasquez Agalu, thank you, Lola, for a wonderful job that you did. Josh Larson. Josh, thanks so much, my friend. Zuri Balmakum, thank you, Zuri. And Natasha Robinson, I want to thank you and the next generation, the next generation of justice seekers. Dion Dodd, I want to thank you. Dion, where are you? Thank you very much.
So that is the prosecution team. That, again, is Keith Ellison, the attorney general. You saw one of the key prosecutors there, Steve Schleicher. They also referenced one of the lawyers there, Good Trouble. Of course, Good Trouble is a phrase coined by the great civil rights champion and Congressman John Lewis, talking about Good Trouble. That was characterized by that. Again, reaction pouring in from across the political spectrum here in Canada. We have just had the leader of the Conservative Party tweeting out, justice has been served. Racism has no place in our society, and brutality should never be part of wearing a uniform. That's Aaron O'Toole. He's tweeted that out. We now have some audio of Joe Biden. I think we got some video, the president of the United States calling the Floyd factory after the after the verdict. Let's listen in. Here's Joe Biden, who will make a statement, by the way, with the vice president later tonight. Let's check this out.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
How's Gianna doing?
Just feeling better now. Nothing is going to make it all better, but at least God, now there's some justice. And, you know, I think a John is coming. My dad is going to change the world. He's going to start to change it now.
That's right.
Yes. Yes.
Amen. He's going to change it now. Yes. You've been incredible. You're an incredible family. I wish I were there just with my arms around you. I'm standing here with Cedric. We've been talking. We've been watching every second of this. And the vice president.
So that's kind of hard to hear, but Joe Biden calling the family who are gathered around, probably much like we all do, and you gather around a phone and you can hardly hear, but saying there is some justice here, some justice. Obviously, echoing earlier what George Floyd's sister said, he may not be here, but we have got some justice. One of the themes here, and I want to bring in Sandy Hudson, the co-founder of Black Lives Matter Toronto. Sandy and Angie Seth had brought this up, the impact in Canada. One of the things on trial here was use of force among policing. The defense had said this was an appropriate use of force. Obviously, the jury unanimously said, no, it wasn't. It constituted second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. But this notion of what is appropriate policing, what is a excessive use of force, that was on trial. What is the resonance of that in terms of policing here in Canada, Sandy Hudson?
I mean, here in Canada, we don't have a lot of information as to how the police use force. I'm currently engaged in a research project with the team at Black Lives Matter Canada, looking at use of force. We've been doing this for months. It's very hard to get information, even through freedom of information requests. Police are saying that they don't collect some of this information, which is also a concern. We don't actually know what's going on in Canada, and what we do know from the United States is very disparate. Some of it's available, some of it's not. And that's one of the ways that policing operates so negatively in our society, is by hiding when they're doing something particularly heinous with respect to our communities. You know, I listened to the Attorney General there, Ellison, name off all of those names that have been impacted by police violence over the years. And we could add so many incidents in Canada: Jermaine Carby, Abdurrahman Abdi, Clive Mensa, Regis Korchinski-Paquette, DeAndre Campbell, Chantal Moore, Rodney Levi, Ifaz Chowdhury. There's so many. I could go on. What we need to do is not be complacent or placated by this singular verdict. We need to continue to indict the entire system of policing and take a look at how we do safety and security in our society, how we tackle the issues of safety and security in our society, because it's only then, when we start taking care of those issues from the root, that, you know, I can comfortably say that I'm not just waiting for the next incident to happen, because that's what I fear right now.
Yeah, Angie, I know you want to jump in. Angie Seth.
Sandy, talk to us a little bit more about that, because you and I have had a number of conversations. You've been on the Realities of Racism panel a few times. We'll have you back on again on Saturday. But where we go from here, because as you say, you know, are we waiting for the next incident, the next situation, whether it be in the United States? We're watching it very, very closely here in Canada. I know a number of people, of course, are going to be watching this. A number of communities are going to be watching it. And you and I have talked about what the relationship is with the police force, but also what should the responsibility be of the police, and where those changes need to happen. In the U.S., they're talking about a number of bills, legislation that needs to be put forward and need to be passed. Talk to me more about what needs to happen here in Canada on that front, in terms of legislation, in terms of redefining the powers of the police.
Well, see, I think very first and foremost, our politicians need to stop ignoring Black communities. I mean, last summer we saw the largest movement in Canada that we've ever seen. There were over 200 protests in cities and towns across Canada. That is absolutely unprecedented. And our politicians barely responded.
Sandy, if you don't mind, I'm just
going to
measure. Sandy, I'm just going to hold you there for just a second. We've got Al Sharpton, the George Floyd's family, also there. Let's just listen in here and expect them coming to the podium. So let's just listen in right now.
His name is George Floyd!
Come on, family. Before we say anything, we're going to have a prayer. When we first came to Minneapolis and went to the site when Ben Crump called, we remembered how Eric Garner said, "I can't breathe 11 times. His mother came with us to the site. The family came in and his family has stood together for the last 11 months watching this video go over and over and over again. This family stood with pain, suffering, and not knowing what the future held, because so many families went and got nothing. They thanked God when they got the indictment, which would not have happened had not the Attorney General Keith Ellison took this case.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Keith Ellison fought and put together a team that made this possible. And this is the first time in the history of this state that a white police officer has been convicted, less known convicted, of a murder. This is the first time in a long array of fights that we've seen three counts guilty at all three. We don't find pleasure in this. We don't celebrate a man going to jail. We would have rather George be alive.
Amen.
But we celebrate that we, because young people, white and black, some castigated, many that are here tonight, marched and kept marching and kept going.
That's right,
many of them looked down on, but they kept marching and wouldn't let this die. And this is an assurance to them that if we don't give up, that we can win some rounds. But the war and the fight is not over. Just 2 days from now, we're going to have to deal with the funeral of Dante Wright in this same county, the same area. We still have cases to fight, but this gives us the energy to fight on. And we are determined that we're going to fight until we make federal law the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act must be law. We want to thank all that were involved, especially the Attorney General and the governor and others. We want to thank President Biden, who the first time he came out of his house during the campaign, he flew to Houston and met with the family and Attorney Crump and I. And he sat there, and I will never forget, he said to George's daughter that, "I heard you say your father is going to change the world." Well, we can now tell George's daughter she was right. Her father has begun the changing of the world for real. But before we do anything, we first want to pray and thank God, because somehow God made a way. He had mercy. We believe in a God that can even get through the cracks in a jury room and bring conscience and bring truth. And that jury, we want to thank them for letting God give them the strength. Wherever they are tonight, we want them to know we broke down in tears when we heard the verdict. We had to hold each other and hug in tears, because too many nights we've cried. Many of us for decades spent nights in jail. But today we can wipe our tears away and fight on for another day. There's sunlight. We're going to keep going till we bring it for the Eric Gardners and the Breonna Taylors, whose boyfriend is here tonight.
Kenny Walker.
Sean Bell. So many that did not get this night. This night is for them. Let us pray. Let's lock arms and pray like we can, folks. Where? Come on, Brandon. Where's Filoni?
Right here.
Yeah, come on. You and Rodney, come up front. You know you're hiding now. Brother Chris, get next to the Attorney General there. Let's pray. Dear God, we thank you for giving us the strength to stand together. Sometimes we would question each other Sometimes we say this is just going to be a waste of time. But somehow you touch us in the midnight hours and teach us to hold on. And that if we would be faithful over a few things, you'd give us the victory over many. We thank you because we know it was not any doing of ours, but your loving kindness and your tender mercy that made tonight possible. Bless those that worked, that made this prosecution something they couldn't deny. Bless those policemen that got on the stand and testified against another policeman. Bless the jury that listened to the evidence and didn't listen to those that may criticize them for doing this. Bless the prosecutor, Keith Ellison,
yes, Lord,
and his staff,
yes, Lord,
that did their job, even though they didn't know what the outcome would be. Bless Ben Crump in a special way, that worked tirelessly, that jumped on planes and left his family to make sure that justice would rain down. Thank you for all of the civil and human rights leaders that stood up. And we thank you for the nameless grandmas and grandpas that would get on their knees and ask you to give us a victory this time. And Lord, as we give you the thanks and give you the praise, let George know that his name is going down in history. They may have put their knee on his neck, but he will now be a figure that we will take the knees off our necks now. And we give you the praise. Thank you. And God, we give you the glory. These blessings we ask in your name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Let me say that I want to bring on now a man who has symbolized the fight for justice. He didn't seek the role, but he rose to the occasion. America, for many years, didn't have someone to stand for us. The last 4 years, we didn't have an attorney general's office that would even hear our cry. But we had been raised to believe that God always has a ram in the bush. And God has a way of taking the most humble of people and raising them up. We had an attorney general in Black America that has represented these cases with the acumen and skill of one that was raised in the South but came to claim this nation in a new direction. I bring you the attorney general for Black America, Ben Crump.
Yeah. I love it.
Thank you, Reverend Al Sharpton, not only for your mentorship, not only for being a great civil rights leader, but for being a moral authority, especially making sure, no matter what happened, that we always maintained the moral high ground, knowing that we were on the right side of history as we fought for justice for George Perry Floyd Jr. Say his name.
George Floyd.
I am a member of a great team of very talented attorneys. And I'm going to acknowledge them. Yeah. We got the Omegas in the Kappas, Reverend Jackson.
That's right.
And the Alphas in it.
That's right.
I want to acknowledge these great group of lawyers and then the family members. Two or three of the lawyers will address you. And then at that time, we will hear from the family members before we take any of your questions. I want to acknowledge a great lawyer from Chicago, Illinois, one of the best I've ever had a chance to work with, Attorney Tony Romanucci.
Yes, sir. Yes.
I want to recognize my partner on the front line in this case, one of the best lawyers at Ben Onum. He hails from Atlanta, Georgia, Attorney Chris Stewart.
Yeah.
His law partner, Attorney Justin Miller.
Yeah.
Attorney Madeline Simmons. A great Minnesota lawyers, Attorney Jeff Storms. Raise your hand, Jeff. Attorney Michelle Godot.
And who else we got here? Anybody else?
Attorney.
Hey, we have Attorney Scott Masterson, who's not present. Attorney Bavani. I said Michelle. We got Michelle. All right. And just a great group of lawyers. And I want to let you know who we have present here with the family here in Minneapolis for this historic day. We have George Floyd's brothers. We have Philonis Floyd. We have Rodney Floyd. We have Brandon Williams, who's George Floyd's nephew, but was more like a son to him. They call him Woo back in the Third Ward.
Woo.
We have Keita Floyd, Philonis' wife. We have... Oh, where Terrence at? Terrence, New York, where you at? We got Terrence Floyd, his sisters who are not with us, but we should absolutely acknowledge Bridget Floyd, who hails from North Carolina, his sisters Latanya and Zsa Zsa, who hail from Houston, Texas. Yes, yes. We have his cousins, Sharita McGee, Tedra McGee, and Tara Brown. And we have the mother of his daughter, yeah. Gianni Floyd. We have Roxy Washington, and we have Gianna. Yeah. And so I'll make some brief remarks, and then we're going to have Attorney Stewart. Oh.
Angela, cousin
Paris.
And Uncle
Selwyn.
Vince.
All right. Any more Floyd family? I know it's a big crew. AD. AD, the man he came to Minneapolis with. And Adara. So I'll make some brief remarks, and then we're going to have Attorney Stewart and Attorney Ramanucci make some brief remarks, and then we're going to hear from this family. And we're going to try to leave here today knowing that America is a better country.
Yes.
America, let's pause for a moment to proclaim this historical moment, not just for the legacy of George Floyd, but for the legacy of America. The legacy of trying to make America for all Americans. So that George Floyd's victory and America's quest for equal justice under the law would be intertwined. America, let's frame this moment as a moment where we finally are getting close to living up to our Declaration of Independence, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equally, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that amongst them are life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Well, America, that means all of us. That means black people. That means Hispanic people. That means Native people. That means Asian people. That means all of us, America. We frame this moment for all of us, not just for George Floyd. This is a victory for those who champion humanity over inhumanity, those who champion justice over injustice, those who champion morals over immorality. America, let's lean into this moment and let's make sure, Reverend Al, that this moment will be documented for our children yet unborn as they continue on the journey to justice, knowing that the blood of George Floyd will give them a trail to find a way to a better America, a more just America.
where Breonna Taylor gets an opportunity to sleep in peace at night without the police busting in her front door. A more just America, where Ahmaud Arbery gets to run free and not be lynched for jogging while black. A more just America, where Jacob Blake and Anthony McClain and Walter Scott and Laquan McDonald and all these other black men, Terrence Crutcher, who was shot in the back while running away like Dante Wright was just a week ago, because for some reason, black men running away from the police is more dangerous than young white men who commit mass murders and walk towards the police with an assault weapon, Reverend Bryant, like Kyle Rittenhouse in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Wow.
America, let this be the precedent.
Yes.
Let this be the precedent where we live up to the high ideals and the promises when we say liberty and justice for all. Those sun-kissed children are included in all. Those children who overcame slavery, the Middle Passage, the Dred Scott decision, Plessy v. Ferguson, Jim Crow, and his much smarter, wiser son, Jim Crow Jr., Esquire. Let this be the precedence where we overcome systematic racism and oppression, and that we are a better people, and we will leave our children a better world for us all. At this time, we will hear from a great lawyer, because nobody does this alone. It's always a team effort. And we have the lawyers, the preachers, the civil rights leaders, the education leaders, the activists.
Yes, yes.
Let's give a big round of applause for the activists.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
The people who stayed in the streets.
That's right.
The people who came nationally, but more importantly, the people who were here locally, who were standing up for George Floyd on 38th and Chicago Avenue. Day in and day out, silky, the people who wouldn't go home, wouldn't stay quiet.